Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Friday, March 2nd, 2018. The time is 9:10 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Senator Machicki, Senator Olson, and Senator Von Imhoff. On today's agenda, we have SB 128, Marijuana Education Treatment Fund. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Senator Giesel, if you'd join us at the microphone, if you'd like to provide any opening comments. We are going to have a presentation on the bill in just a few minutes, as well as if Jane Conway wanted to. Have we done a sectional yet? So we'll have Ms. Conway come forward to do a sectional, and then we'll go into the presentation. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel, representing Senate District N, as in November. Madam Chair, this is a new fund being established using tax money from marijuana sales. You might be asking, why do we need to do this? Madam Chair, I volunteer in a public middle school. While my focus in that school is healthcare services, I also do screening for depression, for suicide, and for drug use. Many kids in middle school are confused about marijuana. Some have already tried it as middle school kids, or they're exposed to it as secondhand smoke. I have tools that I use to illustrate to kids the sugar content of drinks and explain to them how that adds to weight gain. I have illustrations that show them why they should wear a seat belt or a bike helmet. When I ask middle schoolers if they smoke cigarettes, the common response is they laugh and they say no. And then I ask them to use alcohol, and they laugh again and say no. But when I ask them about smoking marijuana, they commonly pause, and then they'll say no, or some of them actually say yes, I've tried it. Marijuana is a new challenge, Madam Chair. We've succeeded with cigarettes and alcohol with this middle school population, but marijuana is a new challenge. They're hearing that this drug is now legal, and therefore, they construe that it's safe. Madam Chair, this bill provides that the Division of Public Health will develop materials that help clinicians like me in offering healthcare services to also offer these students, not just middle school, but the high school students I interact with as well, and adults, information about marijuana. In fact, I have an example here of materials that are already been developed by the Department of, or the Division of Public Health. The plan with the bill is that money from this fund, money from the taxes, and you will see how that that money is distributed, but the money from the taxes would be offered as grants to not local nonprofits all over the state that connect with kids. After-school programs, native corporations, anyone that can connect with the students, as well as the public. It also allows the Division of Public Health to collect data on marijuana use, public attitude, and knowledge. It provides the education tools, as I said, to help adults and kids understand the cognitive impacts of marijuana, as well as the health impacts. Madam Chair, already, the Department of Public Health has materials out about alcohol use. They do this kind of education and development of materials, as well as distribution of the materials already. So they are a perfect organization to distribute them and to develop them and to put forth the grants. I know, Madam Chair, that the division is here to speak to you, and Dr. Butler is also online. So with that, if you're interested in a sectional, my staff is here to provide one. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Giesel, as you look at the marijuana problem, which is pervasive throughout the state of Alaska and has certainly made its prominence there in rural Alaska, how do we know that some of those funds are going to be spent in places other than the metropolitan areas?
Senator and Dr. Olson, through the chair, that is a big concern to me, and part of the reason that in the bill I don't name a single recipient. I don't name a specific recipient of the grant funds. I believe the Division of Public Health is well equipped to make sure that this information and the grants, the ability to distribute this information, gets all over the state to the North Slope Borough School District, to Northwest Arctic School District, to the Native corporations, the folks that actually have the contact with kids and the public in the rural areas.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I like that idea that's spread uniformly throughout the state.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Giesel, one of the things that I've noticed is that we went from 25% now to 35% of the taxes collected to go to these programs. And I understand already 50% of the taxes collected go to another designated general fund for prevention and drug rehabilitation. So that leaves us 15% essentially go to the general fund. And certainly not arguing that the programs that the 85% goes to are not worthy. That's notwithstanding. I think it's more of a philosophical discussion of when we designate receipts into DGF buckets, it creates perpetual programs, good, bad, or indifferent. It just, that's what it does. And then we decrease our ability to be flexible with the money collected. I am just concerned that we're putting the bulk, clearly, of the marijuana funds into designated programs. And I felt more comfortable before when it was at 25% versus 35. So that's just my thoughts at this point.
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, I absolutely understand your concern. The reason that I changed that percent in this committee substitute was because of feedback I heard after the Health Committee had reviewed the bill that 25% wasn't going to be enough. But I am absolutely flexible on that, and honestly, I leave it to the wisdom of the Finance Committee how much should go into that general fund. Obviously, additional money could always be appropriated in subsequent years should the fund grow or the taxes increase. But I appreciate your concern, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? Ms. Conway, if you could identify yourself for the record. And then provide the committee and those Alaskans following this issue a sectional, what the bill actually, how it functions.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Finance Committee. I am Jane Conway, staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. The sectional, I will start with section one. The AS4361010 is the excise tax on marijuana statute. That's technical and conforming language. It clarifies which fund is being referenced in that section, which is about recidivism reduction funds. And since we are establishing another fund, the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund, in the subsection to follow, Legislative Legal wanted to correctly name which fund was being addressed in that section just for clarity. So that is just technical and conforming language by Legislative Legal. Section 2 is a new subsection. It creates the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund within the general fund. And after receiving the taxes collected from the marijuana sales, the Department of Administration would separately account for and deposit 35% of those proceeds into the fund. And the legislature may appropriate those monies for the purpose of funding the DHSS programs. This section specifies that the money does not lapse. And then in Section 3, under AS4429, which outlines the duties of Health and Social Services, it contains two minor fixes also from Ledge Legal, adding the word the to 11 of the section, and also the word to item 14. And it adds this section that the DHSS will administer the Marijuana Education and Treatment Program. This section also outlines the following components of the program. Number one, a community-based marijuana misuse prevention component. Number two, a youth services component. Number three, public education geared towards the prevention of youth initiation of marijuana use, education regarding the effects of marijuana, and education education regarding marijuana laws in general. Number four, surveying of youth and adults to determine their knowledge and their awareness and attitudes on using marijuana products, along with the need for trained professionals. Number five, monitoring of the public's health relating to consequences of marijuana use. And number six, providing for substance abuse screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. And those are the three sections of the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Conway. Are there questions from committee members on the structure of the bill? Senator Giesel, when we say provide recreational education and character building programs for youth outside of school hours, can you give us any clarification on your intent or opportunities for positive social leisure and recreational activities? Are you keeping it wide so the department through regulation can, in their judgment, create grant programs? How was that specific language chosen?
Madam Chair, the intent with that language was that the division would target after-school programs. So many kids these days don't go directly home after school. They're engaged in a sports program after school or other recreational activities after school. And so those programs have great contact with kids and would be great conduits to provide information.
So your intent as a sponsor is to have a more global but definitely connected with kids and kids' safety in regards to use of marijuana?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
So I just, my view of the bill is that there would be programs available for K-12 throughout the state, but there's no doubt that the after-school programs have a more concerted effort on sometimes children that are higher risk and already have a concerted effort on building not only the self-esteem but skills. You know, these are often kids that have a greater proportion of adverse childhood experiences. They're very effective in those programs. So I hope there's a balance between K-12 and after-school programs, but I know the programming will be available to any organization that deals with younger people on a regular basis. Is that also the case?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, in an ideal, for me, it would mean that Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, faith-based programs, Sunday schools, all of these organizations would have an opportunity to access the materials and the ability to fund providing this for all kinds of kids. I will add that drug misuse crosses all socioeconomic lines.
Thank you. Senator von Imhoff.
So I guess you named some organizations that are already doing good work. They do activities like, you know, arts and crafts and basketball and whatever, a whole list of activities. And when you said something about access to materials, is this money going to essentially expand? One of the questions I had, are we creating new programs? Are we going to attract new kids and open up the programs and make them bigger? Are we going to expand into new age groups, like maybe add more high school programs, I'm just guessing? Or are we just going to are we supplanting existing programs with this additional money? And then, so that's some level of questions. And then the other one is, if they're already doing, you know, soccer and chess and homework help and so forth, are they just going to do more of the same, or are they required, if they're going to receive this money, to have 15 minutes or something like that of drug counseling or a program associated with drugs and alcohol? Thank you.
Senator von Imhoff, through the chair, the best person to respond to that type of question, that level of detail, would be Jill Lewis or Dr. Jay Butler, both of whom, of course, are in the Division of Public Health. I believe yesterday you heard from, and I think she may be online, Lisa Muse, who is the Public Health Specialist in the Office of Substance Misuse and Addiction Prevention. And they could flesh out for you better. But this is the kind of broad the broad program that I envision, that multiple organizations would have the ability to access expertise, materials, and any small funding they might need to provide this for kids.
Follow up, Senator Von Imhoff?
No, thank you. Thank you.
With that, if the committee is ready, we can invite Jill Lewis to the microphone. And Dr. Butler, I see that you're online for questions. You have heard a little bit of the discussion today. Would you like to provide any feedback before we move into the presentation?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, this is Jay Butler, Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. Maybe just to highlight two things. One, an area we didn't touch on is some of the areas where we have particular concerns that there is a more greater need for public education. And that relates to underage use and early initiation, driving under the influence, and use during pregnancy. Since we may have, I think, last spoken to the Senate, for instance, there was a report that actually looked at nationally motor vehicle fatalities and found that there is a small spike that occurs in the evening hours of April 20th that seems to, which would, of course, correlate with the day when many, particularly younger people, celebrate marijuana. And if I may also just add a comment to Senator Von Imhoff's question, I really appreciate the goal of making sure that the programs are focused, that they're high quality, but we also want to provide flexibility for the local variability. So a program in South Anchorage might be different than, say, one in Brevik. And we want to make sure that the local programs have that degree of flexibility. Thank you. And I see Jill at the microphone. We also would be happy to provide a bit of a more formal presentation, which Eliza Muse is prepared to do.
Thank you, Dr. Butler. Are there questions for Dr. Butler? Jill, welcome to Senate Finance. If you would identify yourself for those listening at home, and then, as I understand it, Eliza Muse is going to assist you with walking through this particular presentation to Senate Finance. It is available online through our BASIS system in Senate Finance. It's labeled Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund, Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, 2018. SB 128 version O. We do have version U in front of us, which is a slightly different. Ms. Lewis, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you and good morning. For the record, I'm Jill Lewis, Deputy Director for the Alaska Division of Public Health. As far as version U, the changes between version U and O don't really affect anything in our PowerPoint.
Thank you.
So with that, I will just simply turn it over to Ms. Eliza Muse and let her begin the PowerPoint presentation.
Ms. Muse, if you could first identify yourself for the record and then please proceed with your presentation.
Good morning. This is Eliza Muse with the Office of Substance Misuse and Addiction Prevention with the Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to share this presentation this morning. Sorry, I am over the phone today, but I'm here in Anchorage. Thank you. So the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund would be similar to the Tobacco Use Education and Cessation Fund in terms of how tax revenues are used. Alcohol taxes are distributed into the general fund as well, and 50% is allocated to the Alcohol and Other Drug Treatment Fund. So these are two funds that are similar to the fund that's being proposed through this bill today. Next slide. This bill would direct 35% of the marijuana excise tax to the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund. Currently, 50% goes to the Recidivism Fund and 50% to the General Fund. This bill would divide the 50% that currently goes to the General Fund between the General Fund and the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund. The overarching goal of this program is statewide coordination between youth prevention, public health and safety, with a focus on community-based work, as well as a component for treatment. About 10% of marijuana users will be diagnosed with cannabis use disorder, and the risk is twofold when regular marijuana use begins in the teen years. So an emphasis is to delay use of marijuana in youth. This also underlies the importance of investing in prevention today to offset future related health care costs associated with cannabis use disorder, car accidents related to impaired driving, and other public health and safety related issues. And again, I'll state today, as I did yesterday, that this approach to utilization to marijuana tax revenue is supported by a 2017 resolution from the American Medical Association. And we have looked at other states who have legalized adult use of marijuana for the purposes of program design here in Alaska. Next slide. Yesterday, we briefly provided an overview of the components of this program, so I will move to the next slide to go over each component in more detail. So now we're on slide 6. Community-based marijuana misuse prevention is about local efforts to prevent misuse before it starts by mitigating risk factors and enhancing existing programs for public health and education to address substance misuse prevention. Our goal is to work alongside the Department of Health and Social Services Adolescent Health Program, also the Department of Education and Early Development, the Division of Juvenile Justice, and also after-school programs in order to provide recreational, educational, and character-building programs for youth outside of school hours. The additional focus on after-school programming is important given that the most recent Youth Risk Behavior Survey data shows us that kids in after-school programs report a lower frequency of marijuana use and initiation. This component intends to expand reach to both urban and rural communities, and our goal with this component is to sustain and enhance existing grants. For example, in regards to the Division of Juvenile Justice, in FY17, 11 rural communities received funding from the Rural Community Action Program to support such things as youth leadership activities and culture camps. Another example is the Department of Education and Early Development's Alaska's Alternative School Coalition for in-school services, which includes participation from Homer, Sitka, Barrow, Ketchikan, and soon Bethel. And finally, the Adolescent Health Program has provided services and trainings to teachers in Aniak, Tok, Prince of Wales, Nome, Bethel, Kotzebue, and Valdez, to name a few. We'll move on to the next slide. The next component is assessment and monitoring. It takes special surveys and analyses to really understand the reasons why people use marijuana, the frequency and mode of use of these products. And we also want to assess which protective factors are the most important in preventing youth from using marijuana, and we need to know if our efforts are successful or not. Assessing trends in knowledge, awareness, attitudes, and behaviors, as well as monitoring health status and use patterns, will help us answer the following questions. Do youth perceive marijuana as a less harmful substance due to legalization? Do youth and adults see driving under the influence of marijuana as dangerous? And how has marijuana legalization affected Alaskans' health and safety? And I think this last question will take some time to answer. We're on slide 8 for anyone who's following along. Marijuana education, this is an area where we got involved because there seemed to be a void in the conversation after legalization and some confusion among the public about the laws, especially around impaired driving and where people could use. The picture on this slide, these aren't your grandma's brownies, was created in order to educate the public about the much higher level of THC and the variety of products in the market today. Now, high-tech horticulture produces marijuana breeds with much higher levels of THC. Also, many people don't know that we aren't just talking about combustible marijuana. There are a wide variety of products on the market, such as vape solutions, concentrates, edibles, topicals. And because there are health effects related to consumption of these products, it is important that healthcare providers, teachers, parents are aware of the products that are out there as well. Our main priorities to date have been to help prevent youth initiation of marijuana use, to educate the public about the health effects of marijuana use, and educate the public about the marijuana laws with an underlying focus on the public health and safety with respect to impaired driving. Next slide. Providers need tools for substance abuse screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, otherwise referred to as SBIRT. Most people are familiar with this in relationship to alcohol and tobacco, but needs to be developed further for marijuana and other substances. These are the exact tools that Senator Giesel was referring to in her introductory statement. Next slide. So why does this matter? Well, you can review the list here, but I would like to call out a few bullets. Use during pregnancy is an area of concern, and use is not uncommon. Again, recent data from California indicates that the highest rates of marijuana use among pregnant women are among women 18 years and younger. There is an association between prenatal cannabis smoking and low birth weight in offspring, as well as some evidence that prenatal cannabis exposure may interfere with normal development and maturation of the brain. There are also issues surrounding mental health and substance use, which is an area of concern. According to the National Academy of Sciences reports and research from the Colorado Department of Health and Environment, there is a substantial evidence of an association between cannabis and the development of schizophrenia or other psychoses, with the highest risk among most frequent users. And also substantial evidence that marijuana use in adolescence and young adulthood is associated with psychotic symptoms in adulthood. I bring this up here because it is a healthcare provider education issue. So now we're going to take a look on the next slide at the most youth risk behavior survey data that we do have. The blue line here represents the proportion of Alaska traditional high school students' use, and the red line represents use in the past 30 days, which serves as a surrogate measure of current or ongoing use. So we're on to the next slide. Adults can help reduce youth marijuana use. This slide underlies the importance of programming that targets risk factors and strengthens protective factors, such as after-school programming. Again, these are factors from the 2017 Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Youth with supportive teachers, parent communication, community connections, and after-school programs report less marijuana use. Looking at the adult data on the next slide, the adult trend for Alaska has been stable at around 15 to 16%, which is similar to the other states who have legalized retail sales. And finally, to the last slide, this is an opportunity for Alaska to join with Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and California to direct tax funding towards a very rational way to regulate retail marijuana in a way that can reduce the public health risk with a minimum of regulation. And at that, thank you for your time, and I am available for any questions or additional follow-up. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Liza, it looks to me like there's a correlation between legalization and an increase in usage in youth. Would you say that's a fairly safe assumption?
Actually, over the course of, through the chair, Senator Machicki, this is Eliza Muse for the record. The data we do have on youth use does show a stable, that it's remained relatively stable over the last 10 years. And But I think in context with other substances, that's something that we could actually take a further look at in terms of tobacco use. We have seen over the past 10 years, tobacco use has declined significantly, 70% over the past few years. So in the context of other substances, I think that with looking at marijuana use as being stable could be a potentially an area of concern. Thank you.
Senator Machicki, follow up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Eliza, can you go back to slide 11? When did the initiative pass the legislature and become law? Or pass the, when did the initiative pass from the people of Alaska? Wasn't it 2015?
Yeah, it was 2014. For the record, this is Eliza Mews, the Department of Health and Social Services, through the chair, Senator Machicki. The initiative passed in 2014. Stores opened the fall of 2016. And it does look like there was a slight blip there. Again, in terms of significance, we could test that. But looking at long-term over the last 10 years, it looks like it's been relatively stable. So we see, and also, you know, perception of harm is a very important protective factor, and that's something that we are tracking very closely. Right now, or in 2017, 19% of youth, only 19% of youth thought that there was a great risk of harm in using marijuana products 1 to 2 times per week, and that's a really important measure to track in terms of legalization as well.
Last question, Madam Chair.
Certainly, Senator Machicki.
Can you talk a little bit how tobacco use education and cessation funds are dispersed? And if it would be similar to your vision of the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund?
That's a great question. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, Eliza Mews, for the record, this program was designed really looking at the Comprehensive Tobacco Use and Education Fund as a model. That fund funds community-based work, public education, monitoring, as well as treatment, and I know there's a fifth component there, but essentially the comprehensiveness of the tobacco use program is really what drove the design of this program. We know that comprehensive programs, not just focusing on treatment, not just focusing on one element, but are the most impactful, and I think everyone is aware of the significant declines in youth tobacco use in our state, and definitely it can be contributed to that work, but also a change in social norms both in our state and across the country as it relates to tobacco use.
Senator Machicki?
I'm sorry, I know I said last one, Madam Chair. It would be interesting to see this chart on 11 with the tobacco use chart. I believe the tobacco cessation program and education, I know I'm moving the words around, I think it's been very effective, and the reduction in the use of tobacco has been pretty significant over time in teens. Teens Against Tobacco Use, Tattoo, I mean, they've been very effective. It would be helpful to have similar groups regarding marijuana usage as well. But, it'd just be interesting to demonstrate the effectiveness of that program. I think this program could be similarly effective.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Ms. Lewis, did you have a comment?
Yes, for the record, Jill Lewis. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, it may be helpful in your question about comparing the tobacco program to the marijuana program in the bill. The tobacco program also happens to be listed here, and the components of that just happen to be on page 2, starting at line 22. Just waiting for everybody to turn their pages. Okay, so starting on line 22, it's element number 14. In the list, that describes the tobacco program and all the elements that we have to include in that program. And I think it has, you know, a comprehensive program, community-based pieces, youth-based efforts, counter-marketing for and education surveys and enforcement. In the enforcement piece, that's youth underage acquiring cigarettes. So that's what that piece is. And it's very similar to the way it is, the marijuana program is outlined.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't help but just find it ironic that we've now legalized this drug, but now we're turning around and allocating 85% to substance abuse programs, marijuana use prevention education programs, monitoring population health impact as it relates to marijuana, et cetera. Just an interesting behavior that all states seems to do it. You put the graph up on the board. I find it ironic.
Senator Machicki.
I just want to state that I believe Senator Von Imhoff has captured the very definition of irony in a very effective manner.
Senator Machicki, I could just speak for myself. The general population in an effort to access a product has created a issue at a state level that is going to continue to grow. It is going to impact our Medicaid population and the services provided there, as well as health care. Overall, I'll just say that I voted no on that initiative, and we are dealing with the aftermath, and we'll do so as effectively as we can, given the limited resources that we have, and would agree with both the previous speakers that it's beyond ironic. It is it's sad that that addiction can take hold of people's lives and begin to destroy them and deteriorate a family structure when addiction takes hold. So it's sad to me, and I hope that certainly if we can reach out to our youth and try to provide them resilience, it will be helpful to try to start curbing those numbers as we move forward. Senator Machicki, did you have something? Ms. Lewis or Ms. Muse, whoever's appropriate, on slide 12, we talk about supportive teachers, and we know from the various studies that we have reviewed at this table, in our health departments, in our education committees, in our health and social service committees, that supportive adults, whether they're parents, whether they're teachers, whether it's an aunt or an uncle, make a huge difference in the lives of youth. During the process that Alaska went through on the initiative and the initiative passing and the people of Alaska voting for the legalization of marijuana, it was more than legalization. It was actually commercialization. That is the issue. I think that the state let the people of Alaska down in regards to medical marijuana and the use to help those that are suffering from impairing disabilities that this particular product could aid with. So I take that on as part of the legislature's failure to respond to those in need. But I'm looking at supportive teachers here, and I'm reflecting on the initiative. And we had teachers actually come out in support of use of marijuana for whatever reasons they are. And I am thinking about that and wondering if I refer to slide 13 about the current use of marijuana and the prevalence in states that have adopted regulations. Alaska is, you know, above the norm slightly at 15%, and we will see over time whether that number grows. I'm wondering if we've associated that with professions, and if we can dig any deeper into the number of current marijuana users based on industry. And the reason I ask that in comparison to slide 12 is I'm wondering, and granted it was only one teacher, so that is not reflective of an entire group, but I just wonder if there are particular occupations where this is becoming more prevalent than others. Ms. Lewis, Ms. Muse, can you, do we have any other detail into this data?
Madam Chair, this is Eliza Muse for the record from the Department of Health and Social Services. I can attempt to answer it, but I really think that that's exactly, those are the types of questions that we really would like to have answers for, and we can do that with those special surveys and analyses through one of the components, which is assessment and monitoring. We have done some special surveys with the help of one-time funding from the Alaska Mental Health Trust in the past to really understand the reasons why people use, and can break that out also by occupation in those kind of enhanced surveys. But right now, through our behavior risk factor surveillance system, we can get breakouts by income, education, whether those individuals are unemployed, but we really can't go any further than that at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Muse. I certainly would be interested for a survey question on trying to drill down into occupations. We have been provided knowledge both through the Transportation Committee and the Finance Committee that the impairment issue is incredibly important and maybe contributing to increased accident rates now in Alaska. Certainly the insurance industry is looking to see if there is any relationship there. So getting down into industry is important. Senator Von Imhoff.
So I do know that we're going to have a census in a couple years in 2020, and I can't remember when the census comes through. Is it just demographics, like where you live and other things, or is it more in depth like a Gallup poll where they actually ask behavior? Do you know anything, or anybody even online? And I'm only asking because the drug abuse is such a big deal nationwide. Is the census going to take an opportunity to ask those questions? Do they? Can they? Is that legal? I don't know.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this is Jill Lewis, and I will try and answer that question. The census asks strictly demographic questions across the country, but they what they call the short census, and then they follow up in the past with a longer form that is a survey, not a census, and they ask a lot of other questions. And then they do many other types of surveys that are ongoing throughout the year. I think the intent for the next census is maybe to drop the long form and just do the surveys. The Department of Labor can talk more about what's coming up in the next census. So the types of questions that you're asking about would not be asked of every American. It would be typically asked of a select group that then would that they would have. So some answers, yes, and the Department of Labor has folks who are experts on the U.S. Census.
If I might follow up, Senator Von Imhoff, Dr. Butler, is there a
possibility? Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there a possibility that you could reach out to the Department of Labor and see if nationally we could ask for survey questions on opioid use and some of the harmful effects that our country is facing in that survey census? Is there any way that we can engage with the federal government and see if we can at least start a conversation so we can better understand both the opioid crisis and this legalization trend? I think that's Senator Von Imhoff's underlying question. Senator Von Imhoff?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that because there's a move to legalize marijuana throughout the country, perhaps this is a timely question to ask, and I would imagine that the federal government is hopefully heading in that direction, but let's just be sure.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Dr. Butler, I actually filled out several years ago the long form where I took the survey, and quite interesting and detailed to, you know, for those Alaskans who have had this unique opportunity, they want to know whether you've bought a washing machine, you know, during a particular period of time, or a refrigerator or appliance. I mean, it's quite detailed. And while that might be important to many, whether I had appliance purchases, more important to our country might be, you know, if I have used opioids, and if so, why? Did you have a dental extraction? Did you have some major event happen? It seems like we could use that information in partnership with our federal government to try to do something that would affect future policy discussions around issues that are harming Americans as well as Alaskans. Senator Von Imhoff, follow-up?
No, you captured it.
Dr. Butler, is that possible that we can reach out to Department of Labor? Should we do that directly as policymakers?
Madam Chairman, I'll defer to your will in terms of who actually makes the outreach. I think you described very well the extended questions that most that I'm familiar with is associated with issues related to housing rather than health. But we could certainly, just ask the question if whether or not there's any consideration of moving into areas related to health with the next census. Of course, I would offer the caveat that the census is less frequently taken. So even if those questions were asked, it may give a household level snapshot cross-sectionally. It wouldn't necessarily provide us the kind of trend data that we would hope to be able to evaluate policy on.
Dr. Butler, if you would make that request, we'll try to follow up with the support of the committee to do that to the Department of Labor as well as to the governor to see if he
yes,
might.
Yes, ma'am. Happy to do so.
That would be wonderful. I understand why the federal government and surveys like to remain consistent so that we're comparing apples to apples. I would point out that sometimes we ask people to do things that we don't actually use the data for. So again, I would like to know why it is so important to know whether I purchased an appliance, because there probably is a reason that they're asking. The reason probably is their disposable income, and trying to gauge or juxtapose something else against the income that my family might list. But we do have important issues other than my appliance purchase that might be good to understand in a different way, and that would touch all Americans on this health issue. But we're astray and down a rabbit hole, so if I might bring us back to Senate Bill 128. Are there further questions of Ms. Muse or Ms. Lewis regarding their presentation about SB 128? Seeing and hearing none, thank you. As I stated before, when we heard this bill yesterday, the amendments are due by Friday. By Monday at 5 p.m. We do have questions regarding the fiscal note, and we'll be working with Department of Health and Social Services. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing and hearing none. On Monday's agenda, we have Mr. Brad Pickett from the State Assessment Review Board, State Assessment Review Board and SB 86, Alaska Railroad Corporation land before us. With that, we're adjourned.